Halavine. All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Samechei. We are picking up on the bottom of Samech Dalid Amud Beis Amarli Rav Yosef Bere Derava Lerava, which is 2, 4, 6 lines up from the bottom. Our shir this morning is sponsored by David Kahana in memory of Esther Malka Bas Alter Dan. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, her neshama has an aliyah. And also for the Refuah Shleima of Chernatova Bas Alocha Lea, we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, she has a complete and enduring Refuah. So Amalei Rav Yosef Bered Rava L'Rava. So Rav Yosef, the son of Rava, said to Rava, Ba'i Minei Me Rav Yosef. They asked of Rav Yosef the following question. Halacha k'Rebbe, does halacha follow Rebbe? Va'armeli in, and he said yes. Halacha k'Rebbe Yoch, Rebbe Shimon Gamliel, is halacha like Rebbe Shimon Gamliel? Va'armeli in, and he said yes. So now what's happening over here? So remember, they asked Rav Yosef, Bred to Rava, saying to Rava, we once asked Rav Yosef the following question, who does the halacha follow? Remember, in yesterday's daf, we had a fundamental machlokus between Rebbe and Rebbe Shimon Gamliel in terms of when chazaka is established. According to Rebbe, chazakah is established after 2 instances. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, chazakah is established after 3 instances. So now Rav Yosef is saying, we once asked Rav Yosef, who does halacha follow like? We asked him, does halacha follow Rebbe? He said yes. And then we asked him, does halacha follow Rav Yosef? It was Rav Shimon Gamliel, and he said yes. So what happened? So the Gemara says, Va'amrli, and I said, and I figured he was just joking around with me. I figured that Rav Yosef, I guess this was Talmudic humor, right? So, you know, I figured he was just joking around with me, and he would just tell me yes to this and yes to that. Amrli, so you sounded, no, lo sasmihi, upashet lacha, to which the Gemara says, no, it's not true, rather, what's the issue? Lo stamihi upashit lecha. The reality is there are stam mishnayos that go both ways. There are stam mishnayos. Some indicate that the halacha follows Rebbe, and some indicate that the halacha follows Rav Shimon Gamliel. So essentially, Rav Yosef was telling you that there are proofs both ways. So now the Gemara says the following: Nisuin umalkios kerebi. So we'll say therefore. Well, now what the Gemara is going to suggest over here is the following: that in different circumstances we hold like different people. In the case of nisuin, marriage, and malchus and lashes, we hold like Rebbe. We'll define this case in just a moment. Vestos v'shar hamuad k'Rav Shimon Gamliel. And in terms of vestos and shar hamuad k'Rav Shimon Gamliel. Now let's analyze these cases. Nisuin hada amran. So we'll say nisuin is the case that we stated. This specifically is the case in the Mishnah, meaning that if a woman went ahead and she was married to Reuven for 10 years, didn't have children, Reuven divorces her, so she's permitted to marry Shimon. If she's now barren for 10 years with Shimon, then what? Then she has chazaka that she is a barren woman. So when it comes to marriage, chazaka is established after 2 times. And furthermore, again, Malkios, what's the case of Malkios? Disnan, the Malkios alashes, Mishalaka Vashana, if somebody, we'll say, it's interesting a case. Somebody violated a prohibition that would normally carry with it kares. For example, a person eats a Yom Kippur. Now, the idea over here is, let's say there are no, with the kares bearing prohibition, that's misa bidei shamayim. So you're not put to death by human court, but nevertheless, they would administer malchus, they would administer lashes. So let's say somebody is a habitual offender. He keeps, now if you do it once, we could say maybe it was an accident. But if you do it twice, then it's clear again that you are a habitual offender. So what would they do with such an individual? Beisdin kosino solikipa. Beisdin would put him in jail. Uma'achilin ososrom. They would feed him barley. Ad shetehei kreso nifkas. So apparently, again, so they kept feeding him barley and water until his stomach would burst. So in other words, they essentially would put him to death, but not in an active way, more in like an indirect fashion. So this was someone who was a habitual offender. What makes you a habitual offender for Kari's purposes? That's someone who did things twice. So again, 2 times establishes the chazakah. Also, just as an aside, I'll tell you something very interesting. You know, in halacha, there's no jail system. It's just actually very interesting. There's no concept of incarceration, because Kadosh Baruch Hu was trying to teach us a very important idea that you gain absolutely nothing by locking people up in cells. It's amazing. We're learning this as well. learning this, that by putting people in a cell and then thinking that somehow you're rehabilitating them, we know is an absolute fallacy. The only time we find incarceration in Judaism is we have holding cells, meaning when sometimes we don't know what to do with a particular individual, like you find two times in the Torah by the Mekalel and the Mekoshesh, so in Ichub Bamishmar we have a holding cell, or in this particular situation where again there's an intended progression of killing the guy, we have him there. Otherwise there's no incarceration. In any event, Vestos, what's the case of Vestos? So both, those are the two cases where we go ahead and we establish chazaka after two times. Marriage, in the marriage case, the barren case, and Malkius, the Malkius case for Karis. What about Vestos? So what's the case of Vestos? Tisnan, ein ha'isha tapav samechei, ein ha'isha kova asla veses, ad shetikva ena shalosh pamim. Suppose it's actually halacha l'maisa. A woman does not establish a veses. A veses is a established cycle for menstruation. So for example, and Vesa specifically means that a woman will become a Nida at particularly predetermined equal intervals, without getting into all the halachos. There are different types of vestos. There's a vesas achodesh, which means that she could get her period on the same day every month. Vesas haflaga, certain day intervals. All different kinds of vestos. But how many times does a woman have to become a nida at the same time in order to be kove, in order to establish a vesas? So the halacha is shalosh pamim, three times. Three times, if she becomes a nida three times at the same three intervals, so she becomes a nida. She establishes a veses. And I will say, obviously, the ramifications of establishing a veses is that she has a chazaka that she's only going to see, she's only going to have a nida at that particular time, which has many other halachic ramifications, which are not for today. So we'll say, similarly, how do you undo a veses? Meaning, how does a woman go ahead and then kind of divest the size, right? How does she go ahead and break the veses? And the answer is by becoming a nida at three other times other than those determined intervals. So you see that three is the chazaka number when it comes to hilchos nida. V'shar hamuad, what's the case of shar hamuad? Suppose a shar hamuad is a shar, is an ox. Muad means is warned. This is a particular situation where the ox is known as a goring ox. How do you become a goring ox? Tisnan. Ein hashar na'aseh muad ad she'yaidu bo shlosha pamim. When are you considered to be a goring ox? Only after the ox has gored three different times. So we'll say, as I mentioned this to you yesterday, what's interesting over here about this Gemara is that at the end of the day, the Gemara seems to be saying that we do hold both like Rebbe and like Rebbe Shimon Gamliel. Sometimes Chazaka is established by two, sometimes Chazaka is established by three. Again, this is a much bigger sugya as well, but you see that different situations use Chazaka in different ways. Tan Rabbanan. Nises l'rishon v'lo hayu labanim, l'sheni v'lo hayu labanim, l'shlishi lo tinaseh. So we'll say we actually mentioned this outside yesterday. Let's say she married the first guy. We'll call him Reuven. And she did not have children with Reuven. Okay. And then what happened? She married Shimon and she didn't have children with Shimon. So now two husbands that she's been married to and neither union has produced children. What's the halacha? Lishlishi lotinasi. She should not marry the third guy. Now we'll say now that's not a surprise, because why? Who do we paskin like when it comes to marriage? We just read it. Like Rebbe, right? 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 Like Rebbe. Good morning. Yivama Samechai. Okay. All right, Shmuel Silver. Nice to meet all of you. All right, good. So we've asked like Rebbe that for marriage purposes, so Chazaka is established after two. So therefore, again, she married Reuven, no children, married Shimon, no children. She shouldn't marry Levi. Again, I'm using Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, but of course, these three husbands are not related, obviously, because remember, we already established that earlier. You can't marry your brother's divorcee. In any event, unless, of course, potential husband number three already has children. If he has already been mekayim period of arivia, it's no problem for him to marry a woman who's not able to conceive children. However, niseis lemishein lebanim. Let's say, however, she marries husband number three, and husband number three does not yet have children. So now she's married a man who has not yet been mekayim period of arivia. So what do we do in such a situation? Teitse below ksuva. We tell him that he must divorce her, and he divorces her without a ksuva. Now, we'll say, why does he divorce? We'll see why that is. Well, let's just talk about this now for just a moment. He divorces her now without a ksuva. Why? Because the interesting part that the Rishonim discuss over here is what's the case. Now, this Gemara makes the most sense if he married her without knowing her past history, if he thought that she was able to conceive children, and again, then it turns out that based on two previous marriages, that she was unable to conceive children, then essentially it's a mekach tos. It's considered to be a mistaken transaction because he would not have married her had he known that she could not have children, and therefore, again, he's permitted to divorce her without a ksuba. Obviously, if he knew it, and he married her anyway, that's not a mekach tos. He would still be required to divorce her.
He was seen in the ksuba anyway the third time. You've seen that she's not a basula.
He can see that she's not a basula. He doesn't necessarily know that about her past history, that she's been married twice or anything else, that she'd been married such a long time without children. He knows that she's been married. Or he knows that she's not a basula. A woman could not be a basula for a variety of reasons. She could be a mukaseit. She could be something else. In any event, so it would seem to be that this case makes the most sense if he doesn't know her past history. So he has to divorce her, no ksuba. Now, Bosse, listen to this. This is very interesting. Ibayluhu, so we ask the following question. Nises lishlishi velo hayolabanim. So let's say, again, she married husband number 3, and they did not have children. Okay. Mahu dilitav uhu hanach kamoi. So now, Bosse, remember, in marriage number 1 and marriage number 2, so they each divorced her after 10 years. Why? Because the halacha is that you have to divorce a woman or you have to make some other arrangements after 10 years of not having children. But remember, as we've seen before from yesterday's daf, it's not the pshat that he divorces the wife because she's barren. After all, again, we don't know, right? We don't know what the situation is. But here is the interesting part. After she goes ahead and she's married 3 husbands and there are no children, everyone will agree that what? Right? That it's her. She now has a chazaka of being, according to everyone, that's according to Rabbi Adam Shabbat Gamliel, after 3 times, she has a chazaka of being a barren woman. Could the previous 2 husbands go back and demand a ksuva refund? Because now it turns out that the chazaka says that she was the barren one. If she was the barren one, first 2 husbands can say, look, had we known that you were barren, we would have never married you. We wouldn't have married you. And therefore, the ma'aseh, you should refund the ksuva. So the Gemara says, Amri la, he said, Litavena harach kamai, mi matsu Amri la, can they say to her, Iglai milsa da'atu degarmos, can they say now, it's been revealed to us retroactively, that you are the cause of why we didn't have children, you were the one who was barren, and therefore lemaisa, you should have to refund the ksuva. O Dilma, Matzis Amra Luhu, or perhaps she can say to them, Hashtahu Dikachashi. No, the truth is, it could be that we didn't have children in the first 2 marriages because of you. Now, perhaps I'm a little bit older. Now, perhaps it's something to do with me. But Lav Dafka, that in the first 2 marriages, you could definitely say that it was me. To which the Gemara says, Mistabra, Matzis Amra Luhu, Hashtahu Dikachishi. It appears that Halacha Lamaisa, she would be permitted to go ahead and say to them, it is now that I have become weakened, meaning that it's only now that the problem is mine. There's no indication that the problem was mine beforehand, but now the issue clearly is mine. Look at Rashi. Actually, I'm sorry, not yet. So we'll say, so the Gemara suggests, let's turn this down. Okay, so now the Gemara says the following. So we'll say, therefore, it turns out that halacha lemaisa, she can say to them, they can't claim back to her that at the end of the day, now it turns out that you have a chazaka of being barren, and therefore lemaisa, again, you have to refund the ksuva, meaning the fact that now she's been established as barren cannot retroactively go back and reframe the previous marriages. Therefore, they cannot go ahead and claim a refund on the ksuva. Iboilu, a similar question. Nises l'revi v'hayu l'banim. As I listen to this case. Husband number 1, no children. Husband number 2, no children. Husband number 3, no children. Now what happens? She marries husband number 4. Mazel tov, she has children. So we'll say, listen to this. V'hayu l'banim. Mahu dititave l'shlishin. Now, remember what we just said before? If she went ahead and she married husband number 1, no children. Husband number 2, no children. Husband number 3, no children. Then what? He divorces her with what? Without a ksuva. Now the shaila is, now she gets married to husband number 4. Now she has children. Can she go back to number 3 and now claim a ksuva? Right? You divorced me without a ksuva because you said I chazaka that I was barren. Guess what, buddy? It's you. It's not me. Right? And therefore, again, I'm entitled to a ksuva from my 3rd marriage. Because remember, in marriages number 1 and number 2, she had a ksuva because the chazaka wasn't established. It's only in marriage number 3 where now the chazaka is established that there's no ksuva. So the shaila is, now she's been proven to, as she could bear children. children, can she go ahead and claim ksula back from number three? So listen to Rosa, it's very interesting. Amri la, we say to her, shtikusich yafeh midibureich. In this situation, is actually a good, right? Sometimes silence is much better than anything you have to say. Or we say to her, listen, it is in your best interest not to do this. You know why? Dematzi amar la, ana adaita dahachi lo girashticha. Because Rabbi Yosef, if she does that, you know what husband number three can do? Husband number three can do, you're right. You know what? And I love you so much. And I would have never divorced you had I known that you were able to conceive children. The only reason I divorced you because I thought you were barren. Now it turns out that what? That you're not barren. And good news, let's be together for the rest of our lives. Right? The get is bottle because it was given under false pretenses. And therefore, we're still married. Only one problem, which is, right, she's now had a baby with husband number four, which if husband number three is able to be mevatel the get, makes that child into a mamzer. So the Gemara says, therefore, we say to her, better to go ahead and not say anything, because otherwise you could open up a Pandora's box. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Maskil or papa, that doesn't make any sense. Ihi shaska. Anan mishaskinan. So if she's going to be quiet, are we going to be quiet? Mira Papa saying, I don't understand. If that is a real argument that husband number three could actually advance, then whether she says something or not, we are looking at a major problem. Because now what you're saying is that the get of husband number three essentially was a conditional divorce, even though, again, there was no explicit condition built into the get, but essentially it was circumstantially a conditional divorce. And now that it turns out that the condition was false, i.e. she's not barren, that the divorce is negated. In which case, even if she says nothing, do we not have to be choshish? That maybe that child from the fourth marriage is a mamzer, to which the Gemara says, "I'm sorry." The Gemara says, "Ella arminan hashtahu dibriyasa." Rather, we say like this: We say nothing's changed. The truth is clearly she was barren in the course of marriages 1, 2, and 3. And it's not the pshat that now it turns out that she was never barren. Rather, we have a different way of looking at it. How we look at it, that l'maisa, Baruch Hashem, whatever changed, something changed. Literally, she became healthy. Right? So meaning what Rabbi Papa's saying is, because otherwise, if you look at it the other way, so we'll say, I have to understand something, that when we give gittin, so one of the things that we make the husband do is we make the husband renounce almost any conditions, either stated or implied. So meaning that you're not divorcing your wife with any kind, based on any one thing or based on any condition that should it change, it would negate the get. That's because, again, our process of getting has evolved as a result of all the circumstances mentioned in the Gemara. But the Gemara saying over here is that clearly, husband number three is divorcing her for one reason and one reason only, and that's because she's established as a barren woman. So the Maisa, again, if she now comes back and wants to claim the ksuva, essentially what that saying is, I was never barren. It was really fine the entire time. To which the Gemara says, well, if you're going to take that approach, that posture yields a different problem. Because if she was never barren, then there is the ability to open the door for husband number three to say, well, then you know what? My divorce to you is ineffective. We're still married. In which case, of course, her fourth marriage is in effect adultery, and her child from that marriage is a mamzer. To which the Gemara says, therefore, that's not how we look at it. We don't look at it as if she was never barren. Rather, we say what? She was barren. She was barren, right? And therefore, again, she has no way to go back to husband number three to claim the ksuba. Rather, what happened? Baruch Hashem, she was healed. Something new changed in her right now, and Baruch Hashem, now she's healed. Who?
Maybe he was unable to create children.
That's what she's saying. That would be her claim. That would be her claim. That's exactly the claim. It wasn't you, it wasn't me, it was you. But the Gemara is just saying, understand if you go down that road, you open up the door to other difficult possibilities for her. Therefore, better not to view it from that perspective. Better just to view it as if something has changed in her. This is to her benefit. Because although, again, yes, it precludes her from getting her ksuva, but forget about the ksuva. It is much, much better to have the integrity, familial integrity of her child intact and of her fourth marriage intact than it is to go and have the ksuva. Says the Gemara, who Amar Mina, who Amar Mineir. Well, it's another interesting case. He says that the infertility issue is hers, and she says that it is his. So each one claims that the problem is the other. Amar Rabbi Ami, Dvarim Shebeino Lebeina Ne'emenes. Whenever it comes to matters of intimacy, the woman is believed. The Rabbi said, now what does that mean? The time am I. So Rabbi said, now what does it mean when she claims it's him, he claims it's her? So he's claiming it's her. So each of them are claiming some kind of condition in the other. So let's say he could be claiming a whole variety of things. Either just the simple fact that she's barren, or perhaps, again, there might be other certain physical conditions that he claims prevents full intimacy from occurring. Her major claim against him would be the following, that Lamaisa, in the Chazal understood, or Chazal felt, that in order for a woman to become pregnant, the zera has to be yore kechitz, that the zera, the sperm has to come out with a force. If it trickles out, which let's say the Gemara under the Torah calls a kroshivcha, other people, it doesn't have the ability to impregnate. So therefore, she could claim against him that perhaps again the force of the zera is not strong enough. And that's why there was never pregnancy. To which the Gemara says, "V'taim amai." So now the Gemara establishes the principle: she is believed in matters of intimacy. V'taim amai. Why is that? He kaimala biyor kechetz. Because again, during the course of intimacy, she has the ability to feel if the sperm was actually came out with a force, as opposed to he who may not have that same ability to feel that force. So therefore, again, she is believed in these matters. Amar ihu ezel insav isasa v'ivdok nafshay. Now, listen to this. So let's say he says, fine, you know what? Let's do like this. Right? We're not having children. Now remember, we'll say in this case over here, what he wants to do is he wants to divorce her without a ksuva, because he wants to claim that the problem is hers, and therefore again she's barren. Had I known you were barren, I would have never married you. Mekach tos, I'd like to divorce you without a ksuva. Okay. She says what? She says, it's not me, the problem is you. So he says, I'll make you a deal. Here's what we're gonna do. Right? Let me go try to have a child with someone else. Don't try this one, by the way. Right? Let me go try to have a child with someone else, and we'll see. Right? If I can impregnate another woman, then at the end of the day, it's clear that the issue is you and not me. And I'd like to wait to pay your ksuva until I'm able to establish my own fertility credentials. So the Gemara says, Am Rabbi Ami, af bazu yotzi v'yitin ksuva. We don't do that. If you're going to divorce her because she can't have children, then you have to go ahead and divorce her and give her the ksuva immediately. Sha'ani Omer, kalano se isha alishto yotzi v'yitin ksuva. Because Rabbi say, I say this is Rabbi Ami saying, whenever you're going to take another wife and your first wife doesn't want it. Remember, again, coming from the perspective that polygamy is permitted, if you're going to marry another woman and your first wife is against it, then you must, and she says, if you're going to marry someone else, I want out, you must grant her the divorce and you must give her ksuva immediately. Therefore, I will say, in this type of situation as well, where he's blaming her, she's blaming him, and he wants to say, well, you know what, let me take another wife and I'll see if the issue is mine or yours. Rabbi Ami says, we do not permit that, but rather, again, he divorces her and gives her ksuva immediately. Rava Amar, but yet Rava said, no se adam kamen ashem alishto, that a man is permitted to go ahead and marry many other women other than his wife. Vahu di isleil mizonayu. Rava say, that's all assuming that what? That you have the ability to support them. Marry as many women as you want, just make sure you have the ability to support them. I'm sorry. No, he's not. He's just making a statement that don't think based on this you can't marry other women. You can marry other women if you'd like, but you must be able to support them. And of course, this is all assuming that your first wife is okay with it. If your first wife is not okay with it, you could still do it, but you have to grant her a divorce if that's what she wants, as well as her ksuva. So the Gemara says the following.
The Yavamas, another wife comes in and she becomes pregnant.
You have a Yibum situation, and that would prove the husband's fertility. Correct. If you had a Yibum situation, now she becomes pregnant. That is very true. So the Gemara says the following. I'm sorry. Hu Amar? Aflas bego eser. Excuse me. Ipalt bego eser. Vihi Amra lo ipalt. So let's say he says like this. Now they're married 10 years. He says, listen, you have miscarried during the course of those 10 years. And she says, no, I haven't. Now, I will say, in this case, it's very interesting. So if you look at Rashi, Hu amar ipalt bego eser, kisha anu ba'in lakofa lahotzi, hu amar hipila besoch eser, va'adayin ein zman lahotzi, disnan mona misha shepila. So I will say, now what happens? 10 years have elapsed, and the Beis Din is trying to compel the man to divorce his wife in order to be able to have children. And he says, it's not yet time. Why is it not yet time? because she miscarried during those 10 years. And therefore, remember, what's the halacha? The clock for the 10 years only starts after the miscarriage. So essentially, he says, it's not yet time for me to have to divorce her. And she says, no, I never miscarried. I never miscarried. Okay, so the Gemara says, Rashi says, I'm barren. I'm barren. I've never miscarried. I'm Rabbi Yami. So both says, who's believed? I'm Rabbi Yami. She is believed in this situation as well. Because both say, if she really had miscarried, it is in her best interest to actually admit that. Why? Because at least if she's miscarried, then that indicates that she's capable of conception. If she's capable of conception, she's not labeled as a barren woman, which is to her advantage. If nevertheless, despite the fact that it's advantageous for her to say that she has miscarried, she still says that what? I never miscarried, then we believe her. Essentially, again, because she's claiming something that in reality is to her own detriment, and therefore she is believed. The Gemara goes following. Let's say a woman miscarries, and then miscarries again, meaning she's miscarried three times. She has a chazaka that she miscarries. Rashi says, because again, here would be a situation where he'd have to divorce her, give her ksuva, because apparently, again, he doesn't have the schus to have a family with this particular woman. Hu amar, afila trei, vihi amra tlas. What happens if he says she only miscarried twice, and she says she miscarried three times? Remember, he's saying you don't need to have a chazaka of being a woman who miscarries, and she says, yes, I do. So this happened, this case once came up in the Beis Medrash. And they said, she is believed. Because if it turned out that she did not miscarry, a woman would not want to go ahead and establish herself as having a chazaka of miscarrying. So what's the common denominator between the two previous cases is if the woman claims that her status is something that is of detriment to her, but she's still saying it, then at the end of the day, we will believe her in that situation. Says the Mishnah, Ha'ish mitzvah peri avarivya, a man is obligated on peri avarivya, meaning a man has the mitzvah of having children, avalo ha'isha, but a woman does not. A woman doesn't have the mitzvah peri avarivya. Rabbi Yochanan Maroka says, al shnehem, who omer vayivarech osam alokim, vayomer lahem alokim peru uravu. Rabbi Yochanan Maroka argues in the Tanakh, he says, not true. Both man and woman have the obligation of peri avarivya, and the proof to that is that the Torah says, God blessed them, plural, saying, peru or avu, be fruitful and multiply, plural. So we'll say, fundamental machlokes in Mishnah, Tanakama, and Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka. Tanakama, peri avarivya is only on the man, but not on the woman. Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka, it's on the man and the woman. Says the Gemara, Menachani Mili, where do we get this from? Where do we know this from, that the mitzvah peri avarivya is only on the man and not on the woman, according to the Tanakhama? So Amar Rabbi Loi Mishum Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Amar Kra, because the pasuk says Umiluas Haaretz Vikiv Shuha, because the pasuk says Peru Uravu Umiluas Haaretz, be fruitful, multiply, fill up the land, Vikiv Shuha, and subdue it or conquer it. So the Gemara understands Ish Darko Lichbosh, it is the derech of a man to go out and to conquer. Ve'ein isha darka lichbosh, and it is not the derech of the woman to go out and conquer. The Gemara is understanding the word conquer, bless you, almost like in the context of battle. Therefore, again, the derech of the man is to go ahead and go out and do battle. It is not the derech of the woman. Therefore, again, since Kiv Shua is mentioned in the same pasuk as Peri Avarivya, that tells you only he who's part of Kiv Shua has an obligation in Peri Avarivya. So Gemara says, Adraba, because they're just the opposite. V'Kiv Shua, Tarti Mashma. Remember, Kiv Shua ultimately is plural. So again, it should refer to both man and woman. Amram Nachar Mayitzchak Vikavsa. So you can read it as Vikavsa. So Vikavsa Ksiv. Even though we vocalize it as Vikiv Shuha, you could go ahead and read it as Vikavsha, and he will conquer it. Rav Yossi from Mehachar. Yossi says from here, Ani Kel Shakai Perei Urevei. This is God talking to Yaakov Avinu. I am Hashem, your God. Perei Urevei. Be fruitful, multiply. Singular. Veloka Amar Peru Urevu. Fine. The Amr, so we'll say, so that, so either we're learning it out from Bereshis, I mean, either it's from Bereshis, either we're learning it out from Adam and Chava, or ultimately, again, we're learning it out from Yaakov Avinu. V'am Rabbi Eloi, Mishum Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon, K'shem Shemitzuva Adam, we'll say it's a very important Yisod. K'shem Shemitzuva, I'm sorry? Oh, so that's a very, so Menachem is raising a very good question, which is what about the fact of Ein Lemeidin Davar Mikodem Matan Torah, that we don't generally learn out mitzvahs from before Matan Torah, we're going to see. Good. Bar Shekivanta. So yeah, but remember, this is not just an answer. This is a mitzvah. This is a din. This is a din daraisa, we're assuming. So the notion of learning out a din daraisa from before Matan Torah, we're going to get to it. Bar Shekivanta. We're going to see. So not today, but we're going to see. So the Gemara says the following. Va'amar Rabbi Loi bring Shum Rabbi Lozber of Shimon. And Rabbi Loi is the name of Rabbi Lozber of Shimon. Kishim Shemitzvah Adol Nomar Davar Nishma. Rabbi Loi said, just like it is a mitzvah to say something that will be heard. Now, what does that mean? Look at Rashi. Lomar Davar HaNishma Dichsiv Hocheach Tochiach. The mitzvah of rebuke, which means that if I see someone doing something wrong, I have an obligation to point it out and to say it to them. The same way there's a mitzvah to go ahead and tell someone something that they are going to listen to. Listen to this. Kach mitzvah al adam shelo lomar davar she'eno nishma. It is also a mitzvah to not say something when you know what? The person is not going to listen. So meaning, in other words, that say, make sure you use your words in an impactful fashion. Use your words where they could go ahead and have an impact, but sometimes don't waste your breath when the person is not going to listen. Rabbi Abba Amar Chova. Rabbi Abba said there's an obligation, Shemar. Don't rebuke a letz, a fool. Pen yisna'acha, lest he come to hate you. Hocheach l'chacham v'yavecha. Go ahead and rebuke a chacham, rebuke a scholar, because he will love you. In other words, we'll say, some people are receptive to criticism, and some people are receptive. When we say rebuke, you know, rebuke sounds like you're scolding someone. That's not necessarily what we're talking about over here. It's just the idea of constructive criticism, or just feedback, or pointing out to someone that perhaps what they're doing is not right. Some people are receptive to that. Some people are not receptive to that. There's a mitzvah to go ahead and tell a person who's receptive, and there's a mitzvah what? To not tell a person who's not receptive. I will say, obviously, and also, this comes with a grain of salt. Obviously, when it comes to my children, I have an obligation as a parent. It's not the pshat. Well, you know, is little Chaim going to listen or not going to listen? I'm the parent. It's my job to lay down the law with the kid. But this is more talking about in realm of adults, that sometimes people are receptive to what I have to say. Sometimes they're not. If they're receptive, say it. If they're not receptive, because we all know, because we've made this mistake, if they're not receptive, you actually do more hurt. You do more harm than good than to try to offer your constructive ideas. Another beautiful Gemara. A person is permitted to go ahead and literally change the truth a little bit in order to preserve peace. Where do we know this from? Avichat Siva, Kos Amru LiYosef, Ana Sonar. We'll say Parshas Vayichi. What happens after Yaakov Avinu dies? They bury him, they come back to Mitzrayim. The brothers tell Yosef, your father commanded us to tell you before he died. Your father commanded us before he died to tell you after he died that you should not take revenge on us. Did Yaakov Avinu ever say such a thing? The Pashtos, no. But rather, they lied. They lied in order to preserve a familial peace because they were nervous that Yosef was going to take revenge. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Nassan Omer, mitzvah. Listen to this, Rosai. This is amazing. Remember, Rabbi Eloi says, mutter. Rabbi Eloi says, you are permitted to change the truth a little bit for the sake of preserving peace. Rabbi Nassan says, no, it's not just that you're permitted, but rather what? It is a mitzvah. It's an obligation to go in and do so. Shene Emar, Vayomer Shmuel, Eich Eilech v'shama shal v'hargani. So we'll say this is talking about again where God commands Shmuel to go ahead and anoint David as king. And Shmuel essentially says, how could I anoint David? In fact, Shaul's going to hear it and he's going to kill me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Shaul, take animals, say you're going to offer up karbanos. So you see, the Ribono Shel Olam is commanding Shmuel Hanavi to essentially modify the truth in order to be able to preserve peace within the kingdom. Debei Rabbi Shmuel Omer, this is Debei Shmuel Tana, Gadol HaShalom, Shalom is great, Sha'af HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shinabo, because even God changes the truth in order to preserve shalom. D'mei karik siv, because at first it says, va'adoni zakein, ulebasov ksiv va'ani zakanti. The Rebbe said, right, this is when the Malachim came to give the birth, to give the announce the birth of Yitzchak. So Sarah Imenu hears this, and what happens? She laughs. Why does she laugh? Because she says, va'adoni zakein. Right? Ultimately, again, my husband is old. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu retells the story to Avraham Avinu, he retells it as a way that she said what? I am old. So you see over here that the Ribono Shel Olam even steps in to modify the truth for the sake of preserving Shalom. Rabbi Yochanan ben Barocha was the one who said that what? That Lamaisa, you can go ahead and, excuse me, even a woman is Mitzuvah Peri Varibya. Says the Gemara, Itmar Rabbi Yochanan ben Levi, Chad Amar Halacha, Rabbi Yochanan ben Barocha. One said the halach was Rabbi Yochanan ben Barocha. V'chad amar ein halach Rabbi Yochanan ben Barocha. So both said Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. One said the halach follows Rabbi Yochanan ben Barocha, that women are obligated in prayer of Rivia. And one said the halach does follow Rabbi Yochanan ben Barocha. T'stayim Rabbi Yochanan who the amar ein halach. It would appear that Rabbi Yochanan was the one who said that the halach does not follow Rabbi Yochanan ben Barocha. There's Yosef Rabbi Avau. The ka'amar mishmei Rabbi Yochanan. Halacha, excuse me. The Yosef Rabbi Avau. The ka'amar mishmei Rabbi Yochanan. Halacha. That what happened? That one time Rabbi Avo was sitting, and he said that the halacha follows Rabbi Yochanan. Ve'adrehinu Rabbi Ami Rabbi Asi la'apaihu. And what happened? Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi turned away. They turned away again in almost like a sense of disapproval of that statement. Ve'ikadamri, others explain, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar. Rabbi Chiya bar Amar was one who said halacha follows Rabbi Yochanan ben Barocha. Ve'adrehinu Rabbi Ami Rabbi Asi la'apaihu. Rabbi Ami Rabbi Asi turned away. Amra Papa said, Bishlam Lamandam Rabbi Avo Amra. So here's what's interesting about this. So you have one rabbi saying that Halacha follows Rabbi Yochanan ben Barocha, two others who are standing there, who are sitting there, who turn their heads away in disapproval. Now the obvious question is, if they don't agree that Halacha follows Rabbi Yochanan ben Barocha, then what? Say something, argue. Why are you turning your head away in disapproval? To which the Gemara says, it makes sense if you hold it. It's Rabbi Abba who said that the halacha follows Rabbi Yochanan ben Barocha. Mishum kavod bekeisar lo amrulei v'lamidi. It was Rabbi Abba was considered to be one of the most important people in the Caesar's palace. Not the casino, right? You know, so again, I know nobody got that joke, Baruch Hashem. Right? So what happened? He was considered to be one of the most important people. And therefore, again, they did not want to just disagree with him explicitly. So they kind of turned their heads away, communicating a disapproval with what he's saying, but not arguing head on. But again, if it was Rabbi Chiya bar Abba who said it, why don't they just say explicitly that Rabbi Yochanan is not the one who said the halacha was Rabbi Yochanan ben Barocha? So the Gemara says, "My havi Allah." So at the end of the day, what happened? Meaning, so what is the halacha? Tashma, Am Rabbi Achbar Hanina, Am Rabbi Avo, Am Rabbi Asi. Of the halacha made Rabbi Yochanan beknishta de Kesari. There was one time a situation came before Rabbi Yochanan in the shul in Kesari. Va'amar yotzi v'yitein k'suva. And what happened? And he said this. So this apparently, I will say, if you look at Rashi, Uvdahava, Rashi says, Vihi tav aso, Vihi tav aso legasha, lefishalo hayulabanim. So what happened? Interestingly enough, she was petitioning the husband to divorce her because she wanted out of the marriage because there were no children. She wanted to be able to have a marriage. I was going to have children. She was saying it was him. And what was that halacha? V'amar yotzi v'yitin k'suva. And Rabbi Yochanan Paskin, husband should divorce her and give her a k'suva. V'sagadai t'chalo mifkada. And if you would think that she is not obligated in period of Rivya, k'suva maya v'dita. I will say again, in other words, if the woman is demanding out of a marriage for not a valid reason, and we'll see what constitutes a valid reason, then Lamaisa, she forfeits her ksuva. So at the end of the day, listen to the case. So she's showing up in Beis Din, she's saying, I want out. Why do you want out? Because you haven't had children, and I want children. What Rabbi Yochanan Paskin? Yeah, husband has to divorce her, and what? Has to pay her ksuva. Now that makes sense if what? If she is mitzvah in period of Riv, she has an obligation in period of Riv, if she's saying, I haven't been able to fulfill my mitzvah, I want out of the marriage. Legitimate. Divorce her, give her a ksuva. However, if she is not obligated in period of Rivya, then ksuva maya vidita, then why should she be entitled to a ksuva? To which the Gemara says, Dilma beba machmas taina. Maybe she was coming with another taina, with another claim. What was the claim? Ki ahi da'asai l'kamed Rabbi Ami. There was once a woman who came before Rabbi Ami. Amrle, she said to him, Havli k'suva. So she said to Rabbi Ami, I want out of my marriage. I want out of my marriage because we have not had children and I'd like him to pay my k'suva as well. Amrle, Zil lo mifkart. Say he said to her, Rabbi Ami said, I'm sorry, you don't have a valid claim. Zil means go away. You don't have a valid claim because you are not mitzvah on Piri Verivia. You don't have an obligation to have children. So you can't sue for divorce because there are no children. Amarle, listen to this. She said to him, Mesibu dila mai tehavi alach. What's going to happen to me when I get old? Dahach isisa. What is going to happen? What is going to happen with this particular woman when she gets old? In other words, we'll say what she was saying is, Rabbi Ami, even if I don't have an obligation to have children, there's another reason why I need to have children, which is why? Who is going to take care of me in my old age? And Amar ki hai vadai kaifina. And Rabbi Ami said, you know what? That's actually an excellent taina. If that's the taina you're coming for, not from a halachic perspective, that you have an obligation to have children, therefore you need out, but you want to have children just because, again, you want to make sure that in your old age there's someone there for you, and this marriage is not providing that for you, that is valid grounds to sue for divorce. Your husband will be obligated to give you a get and to also go ahead and pay your ksuva. To which the Gemara says, now again, that does not talk anything about the discussion. Now remember, that's not a raya one way. Now, no, the truth is, I take that back. That is a raya for the fact that she is not mitzvah in Piri Verivia. Because again, had she been obligated in Piri Verivia, the fact that she didn't have children in this marriage would have been enough of a reason to sue for divorce. The fact that that was not grounds for the dissolution of the marriage, but it was only because she claimed, who's going to take care of me in my old age, indicates to us what? That Lamaisa, a woman, is not obligated in Piri Verivia. Amri ki hai vaidina ka hahi, if you guys want to take the Torah, same thing, a woman came up for Rav Nachman, and what? She sued for divorce. She sued for divorce because there were no children, and he said to her, well, one second, you are not obligated in Piri Verivia. Will this woman not one day need a cane for her hand and a shovel for her grave? In other words, if she was saying the same thing, will I not one day need someone to assist me to walk? Will I not need one day someone to help bury me? Same idea, that I need children ultimately to be able to take care of me in my old age. Amar, and he said, ki hai vadai kaifinon. This would be a good reason to force divorce. So Rabosai, what you see, we'll stop over here, but you see from both of these stories is what? Clearly indicates that both of these Rabbanim neither held that women were obligated in Piri Verivia, because if women were obligated in Piri Verivia, the failure of marriage to produce children would by definition be enough to sue for the dissolution of the marriage. The fact that the only reason they granted the divorce with the Ksuba is because from a utilitarian perspective they needed children indicates thus that the halacha does not follow Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka, and therefore women are not mitzvah in Piri Verivia. So we're not finished with the sugya, but we'll stop over here, pick up the last couple lines tomorrow.